Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaveLife.com. Have a scorching week ahead. But first, I've got an issue in my garden. For the second time this year, I have vegetables that are going to seed a year early. So this happened with a planting of kale. I put in and sowed the seeds early this spring, and they came up. They started growing. It was I forget the kind of kale. It was one I'd gotten maybe from Renee's Seeds or Fruition Seeds, but it was a newer variety of kale. I don't think it had anything to do with the variety. It was, I think, the only kale that I grew from seed. I take that back. I have some Tuscan kale I grew from seed, too. But this other one, it went to seed. It bolted. And that's what your lettuce plants are probably doing now, because mine are doing that. And that's supposed to happen when it gets warm out. Lettuce is an annual, and it starts to grow tall. The leaves get smaller, and it puts all its energy into flowering, making seeds. And you can save those often to plant maybe this fall for a second crop of lettuce. Lettuce doesn't like the heat, and that's one of the reasons it bolts as the heat temperatures go up in the summer. But there are these other plants, you know, like kale and Swiss chard and, well, carrots, sort of. They're biennials. And so if you want to get the seeds of kale or Swiss chard or carrots, you have to leave them in the ground all winter long. And they will usually survive the winter, even a pretty harsh winter, as long as there's maybe a little bit of snow cover. And you'll have kale and Swiss chard and carrots that are coming up next year, and you'll be all excited, except that their main goal their second year is just to go to seed. So the carrot will largely become inedible, too fibrous. You should have eaten it before it started growing in the spring, maybe. You can actually use the ground as a cold cellar for the winter with something like carrots and other root vegetables. You just have, and farmers do this, you just have to maybe put some straw or something, a fairly thick layer over the surface where they are, so you can actually dig them out of the ground during the winter and access some cold storage carrots or some of the other root vegetables, or maybe beets. But if you forget them or miss them, they'll start growing in the spring, the second year, and they'll go to seed. And carrots, when they go to seed, look like Queen Anne's lace, which is in the same family. If you pull the Queen Anne's lace out of the ground and smell the root, it'll smell like a carrot. It doesn't taste like one, but it does smell like one. So carrots, these are toast. There's, other than saving seeds, there's really no reason, and I don't need 6,000 seeds from carrots. So, you know, I might let one of them go to seed, and I'll get, I don't know, maybe I might get 100 seeds from that one carrot plant, which would be more than enough carrots to plant later on in next year. But Swiss chard and kale, you know, again, they survive the winter, and you're all excited. I'm going to have more Swiss chard, more kale, except that they go to seed very quickly. They don't produce many greens, and again, you don't need 6 million seeds from kale and Swiss chard if you want to save some. So you just let one plant go to seed, take out the rest, and plant new Swiss chard and kale each year. So these are biennials. And sometimes Mother Nature fools these biennials into thinking that they've been through winter. And some of that really cold weather we had April and May appears to have done that to these seedlings. Now, one way to get around this, which I didn't do, I don't have that big a garden, is to do some staggered plantings. So you plant, you know, part of your row of carrots one week and part of the row the next week and part of the row the following week. And, one of those may be damaged by, you know, the cold or, various weather conditions. And in some years, you might get all of those carrots to grow nicely, or all of those whatever vegetable it is. It might be peas or spinach or kale, but it's good to stagger those plantings to hedge your bets. And some years you'll lose some part of the crop. In this case, I didn't do it, so I lost all of my crop of carrots. And again, it's not a big garden. There might have been 40 or so carrots in that row. So it's disappointing because I love those carrots fresh from the ground. But now I'll plant some kale seedlings that I have in place of them, and we'll use that space for something else. So again, if you have carrots you're growing and or some other plant that is growing strangely, it doesn't look like a normal carrot or Swiss chard or kale or whatever other plant it is, send me a photo and maybe I can give you a sense for what's happening. But at least with these, the kale and the carrots this year have gone to seed, and there's no way to stop that process. So it's the switch has been flipped. They think they've been through winter and they're going to go to seed. If you cut the seed heads off, if you prune them back, if it doesn't matter, they're going to go to seed, and you might as well take them out because they're not going to give you much greens or much of any carrot. So strange thing. I don't remember this ever happening, and I don't seed carrots and kale every year, but I do fairly often, not every year, but fairly often, and I don't remember this happening before. So that was because of the strange weather we had this spring. And I haven't heard from farmers, but I'm going to ask them when I see farmers at the farmers markets whether this has happened for them with some of their crops. And again, a farmer who's growing for CSAs or their farm market or whatever they sell at the public market, they are staging plantings because they really can't hedge their bets on one planting. It could be hail, could just shred little seedlings. And, so a tougher, older seedling might have survived that. Maybe plants that were seeded but are not started to grow yet won't be damaged by the hail, but that one that's a really tender point in their growth just could get shredded by hail in the spring. So they hedge their bets. They plant a variety of times. Now you do this with a couple of herbs also. Dill and coriander, those would be two really good herbs, or cilantro is the other name for coriander, to stage your plantings, because they will go to seed this year, and they'll go to seed fairly quickly. Even varieties that are called slow bolts, they still go to seed fairly fast. So you sprinkle a few seeds, each week, and hopefully it'll give you a longer period of enjoying the greens of dill or cilantro / coriander. Coriander is generally the seeds. When you eat the greens, more often referred to as cilantro, which I'm starting to like cilantro again for quite a few years. I thought it smelled just like those stink bugs when you accidentally squish them. And I haven't wanted to grow cilantro for probably the last 5 years, but I think I'm starting to get over that because I had some really good cilantro in a salad recently. But it does go to seed very quickly. So plant a few batches of it. It's just hard to remember to do that. It's much easier just to get all your seeds planted at once, done on to planting perennials or doing other work in your yard or around your house. And to plant a few more each week takes a little bit of planning, and but the bonus is you're going to get much longer period of these crops like dill and coriander, these herbs, which in the best of years go to seed fairly quickly. Send me photos if you have some plants that are acting strangely this year. I would love to see a photo, and maybe I can give you an idea of what's happening. If you see holes in leaves that you don't understand, wonder, you're worried about maybe, send me a photo. I saw a redbud seedling in my front yard, and my neighbor has a big redbud tree. I have a redbud tree that's a baby of my neighbor's, and this baby redbud tree is now 15 feet high and 15 feet wide. But there are other seedlings of redbuds that have appeared here and there. And redbud is one of the, maybe it's just because it's easiest to see, that this leaf cutter bee cuts these very smooth sections out of the leaves, always from the edge of the leaf. And so, and always kind of curved in a similar way, very smooth, like an artist almost carving these leaves. And I guess the leafcutter bee takes that piece of the leaf and goes into the ground. After seeing the results of this on the redbud for years, I finally saw one of these bees actually cutting a leaf when I happened to be sitting nearby one of the seedlings of redbuds that we have in the yard. And by the way, if you want a redbud seedling, yeah, be happy to give you one. I also have Coosa dogwood seedlings. I have a couple of ironwood seedlings. And I hate to just dig them out and, you know, kill them, compost them, whatever. So if any of those trees sound interesting to you, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. We'll find a way for you to pick it up at some point. Maybe from, I can leave it on my porch steps for you. But there, I do have quite a few of the redbuds in particular. And we have a street in the 19th Ward, Melrose, where a couple blocks of that, almost everyone has a redbud that was planted quite a few years ago, probably on purpose. Someone on the street encouraged other people to plant redbuds because they thought it would be cool to have all of these trees blooming at the same time. They're generally planted in people's yards. They're not the street trees. Those are much bigger trees. Redbuds are not generally huge trees. They're more of an ornamental, not something you'd ever see virtually ever as a street tree. But Melrose Street has quite a few of these redbuds. Heart-shaped leaves, very pretty leaves. Not much fall color, but they are pretty purple when they bloom in the spring. And again, this leafcutter bee, I find it kind of mesmerizing how it cuts these sections and then flies off and it takes them underground. I guess they eat them. Or maybe they use them to create a nest. Not sure how they use them. I got to look that up. But it is fun to see the results of what they've done. It'll take me a little while. I'll at some point get a photo up on my website of the results of these leafcutter bees. But again, you can email me anytime with comments and suggestions, michael@saverlife.com. And the weather this week is going to be scorching hot, really starting, today's going to be 85, but full sun, 88 tomorrow, 88 Monday, 93 Tuesday, all sunshine, 92 Wednesday, chance of a thunderstorm. Who knows whether that'll show up? Usually they don't, it feels like. 93 Thursday, 94 Friday. So a week of 90 or above virtually, and a lot of sun. So back to putting the sprinkler out, doing a little bit of watering, soaking things really well, maybe a couple times this week, depending on what you have growing, how recently you planted it, and whether they are suffering. The combination of sun and heat plus some wind, probably, that's just a tough combination for most plants. So, worst case is you got to move the sprinkler around and, it'll cool you off at the same time. And I intentionally, sort of walk under my sprinkler when I use that. I don't use it in my front yard because those are really all perennials. And once a couple times, maybe once or twice a year at most, sometimes none, not at all, I'll use a sprinkler in the front yard. It's mainly the backyard, vegetable garden, and more annual flowers where the sprinkler probably needs to be used a couple of times this week. And then maybe we'll get some of those thunderstorms will show up. So water in the morning. You know, one of the things that people, what they believe is, and they're right, that if you water at night or very late in the day when the sun is gone, that there'll be less evaporation, which is true. Unfortunately, it also causes problems in diseases on many plants, but especially squash, cucumbers, watermelon, cantaloupes, those kinds of leaves, roses, phlox, or most varieties of phlox, except some of the newer ones, have powdery mildew in a dry year, you know, with no watering. But if you do watering at night, it just makes the problem much, much worse. It often doesn't kill these plants, but it sets them back. They don't look very nice, and it's unnecessary. You just shouldn't water at night. So water in the morning, ideally, and give things a really good soaking water for an hour, hour and a half. Let the water get down and soak into the root zone of these plants. And we've had some summers where we've had no days above 90 degrees. It's a little unusual, but it's happened a few times. Those are great summers for me. I'm not a big fan of 90 degrees. But this year, we're going to have a bunch in just the next week. So, you know, 4 days above 90, if the forecast holds, and Sunday and Monday are going to be close to 90. And humid, warm at night. Those are just the perfect conditions for diseases to grow on your leaves. And you don't want to make that worse by watering in the evening. So you really have to stop watering by, you know, 7 o'clock, maybe at the latest. Give those leaves a chance to dry off. And morning is probably a better time if you can. Use a timer. You can set a timer to anything. They're pretty easy to use. And that's a way to, you don't have to worry about shutting off the sprinkler. But I would test out your timer, make sure you know how it's working, whether it's how, make sure you understand how to use it and it's working properly. You know, set it for 10 minutes and see if it does shut off. If it does, then you know, you're probably good to set it for an hour or two and not worry about checking it again. But it makes a big difference to really soak things and soak them really well. Also, I saw my first lightning bug just last week. I heard from a friend that they had seen them out in the countryside a couple weeks ago, but this was the first one that I'd seen in the city of Rochester in my backyard. And lightning bugs, they are just, they're fascinating creatures. They really are. And just enjoy them, you know, watch them, learn a little bit about them. And one of the things you'll find is that you're more likely to have lightning bugs in your yard if you don't rake every leaf and sort of clean up your yard immaculately in the fall. They really want some leaf clutter and some areas to hide and reproduce, and like a number of butterflies and other insects and things, they really appreciate having what is more like a forest floor than like a lawn and, you know, just some mulch and a few plants. So the less work you do in the fall to clean up, the better it is for a lot of these insects. Also, having fewer outdoor lights helps the lightning bugs, so they don't get confused by these. And one of the insects that really likes to fly around the outdoor lights, the lacewings, at least in my neighborhood or in my yard, they are kind of a green body with long, slightly greenish wings that fold over the back. They might be half inch, slightly longer, and they kind of fluttery wings that you might see. So they fly differently than a moth, and their wings are fairly clear, so they look different than a moth. But I've often seen them around our lights at night or nearby on our house. And those are a beneficial insect. You can buy lacewing larvae to help control aphids. But you can also, again, kind of encourage them around your yard, again, by having a diverse plants, diverse flowers, lots of areas for the insects to overwinter. You can't leave a lot of leaves on your lawn, but rake those leaves into the garden beds, and just all that leaf clutter, it'll turn into compost for you. The snow will compact it. You can sprinkle some mulch on it in the spring, but you're going to have fewer weeds. You're going to have more, better soil nutrition from the compost of those leaves. It's going to hold moisture better. It's got so many advantages. So, again, appreciate some of these insects now, like the lightning bugs and the wings and the butterflies. And then don't do as much cleanup in the fall. Let things be a little more natural. Sarah's Garden Center posted a cool photo of some caterpillars just a couple days ago. They have some striped caterpillars that look a little bit like monarch caterpillars, but they're a black swallowtail, and they're eating their fennel. And fennel is a perennial crop. Sometimes people grow it for the seeds. There are some fennels that are, you might find at a farmer's market, which are a bulb fennel, where you can shave or kind of the crunchy bulb of the fennel plant you can eat. The fennel that's grown for fennel seeds has very ferny texture, very almost licorice-like taste to the foliage, and bronze fennel is one that's been sold a lot, and you see it fairly often. And these caterpillars at Sarah's Garden Center are just devouring it. They might still be out there if you go out to Sarah's Garden Center today. You know, ask them where the fennel is in the garden. But these caterpillars look so big that it's possible that they are going to make a chrysalis, and you won't see them. And these swallowtail chrysalis looks like a dead leaf. And they'll probably make it elsewhere, not on the fennel. So you'd have a hard time finding them. But they might still be there today. And it was just maybe like a day ago or maybe 2 days ago that they posted this photo. They're beautiful. And they quoted Jeffrey Glassberg in their Facebook post from Butterflies of North America that only one or two butterflies out of 100 will survive the complete life cycle to become adults and flying. So of the 100 eggs that are laid, just one or two will reach adulthood and survive to produce more eggs. So when you find a caterpillar, consider what it's eating, consider how many of them there are, and also consider what they look like. Some of the hairy caterpillars that are in big groups might be gypsy moths, and those I wouldn't save. And I would just try and get rid of as many of the gypsy moth caterpillars as you could. The hairs irritate the skin and give you a rash. I ran into someone recently that happened to them. A caterpillar, came out of a tree. Often they use a little, like a spider web thread to swing from tree to tree, let the wind blow them over to another tree. And sometimes they'll, end up on you sitting under a tree enjoying lunch or something. And this hairy caterpillar, maybe a gypsy moth, gave them a decent rash. But there are some hairy caterpillars that turn into really beautiful moths, and so again, if you don't have 100 of them, consider learning more about them, trying to find out what they are before you destroy them, because I mean, in this case, you're giving up some fennel, which it's a pretty aggressive plant. You can afford to give up some fennel foliage, and they're going to have, I think, 5 or 6 of these caterpillars probably turn into swallowtail butterflies, which are stunning butterflies. Many are black, some are yellow with black edges. Very colorful if you get close to them long enough for them to see the colors or look them up online. There are lots of different swallowtails that tend to be on certain plants. This one that's on the fennel, I think, might be the same swallowtail that also you might find on parsley. And I found those in my yard before. You know, and they're eating a whole bunch of parsley by the time they get to be a large caterpillar. But, you know, give up some parsley and let them eat. And again, you're probably not going to see the chrysalis. That swallowtail, at least in the case of the one that I raised indoors, made the chrysalis in the summer, but didn't emerge until May. So some of them are going to sit in that chrysalis stage for many months. I think it must have made the chrysalis in late July or early August, and I figured, well, it must emerge by September. And I was sort of used to monarchs that do that and then fly south. But the swallowtails overwinter as a chrysalis and emerge in the spring. And this one that I saved, overwintered up in my attic, I'd given up on it. It emerged in May, and luckily I went up in the attic, and there's this live butterfly in the container that had the chrysalis. And I was certain, totally certain, that chrysalis just hadn't emerged in the fall, because I didn't know enough about the life cycle of it at the time. And luckily it was live. I was able to go out and release it, and I would have been really crushed if I'd found a dead swallowtail in that container later that spring. So you got to learn more about the insects to appreciate them, and please send me photos of cool insects that you find and wondering more about them. I like to see the photos. If it's something I don't recognize, maybe I'll learn something and trying to figure out exactly what it is. So again, a lot of the stores and garden centers, the garden centers in general, are pretty much all open for July 4th. Lucas Greenhouses, I stopped by to see them a couple of weeks ago. Susan Palamaki, she said that they're going to be retiring after this year, and the season is now over for them. They close before the 4th of July, and they are selling Lucas Greenhouses. They've had some interest already. If you know of anyone who wants to get into the greenhouse business, they have some really nice greenhouses, and I think probably really well maintained. Susan and Tom Palamaki have owned it for, oh gosh, what did she say? Maybe 12 years, something like that. And they kept the Lucas name when they purchased it, and really, if anything, ran an even better greenhouse than Lucas had before. And so they've got a really nice operation there, and they're retiring and they're selling it. So again, pass the word along if you know someone who's said, I just wanted to own a greenhouse. This is a big greenhouse, and they know what they're doing. And I would wager, from what she said, they're going to stay in the area, that whoever purchased it could probably work out a deal with them to, you know, work as consultants with you for the first year. I don't know. I didn't ask her about that. I'm just guessing. But I think she said that they are planning to stay here in this area. And you know, it's they've built a great reputation. I mean, it's near Lollipop Farm, and they've got loyal fans that have been going there for years. And so, you know, if you could just start your own little greenhouse, but this is a well-established one. And again, some from what appear to me really nice facilities. I don't I haven't seen looked behind the scenes, and I don't know a lot about running greenhouses in general, or almost anything about running greenhouses in general. So it's just based on my sense of who they are, that they would maintain things really well, and their plant quality has really been excellent over these years. So again, Lucas Greenhouses is for sale, and congratulations to Susan and Tom Palamaki for their hard work for all these years, and really producing such top quality product year in and year out. It's, you know, Mother Nature throws all kinds of challenges to farmers in general, and greenhouses. You know, think about windstorms and what they do to greenhouses. It's a challenging business. But they had a banner year, and talking with a lot of the garden centers and greenhouses, this is, you know, a lot of businesses are struggling because of the shutdown and the pandemic, but people are planting more, they're growing more, they're buying more, and I would say in general, from the garden centers and nurseries that I've talked to, they've had fantastic years. It got started late, and plants were just growing slowly, but they've had some really good years. I was just out at Bridge and Water Gardens. They've been shipping a lot of lotus, and I was asking Lily about their shipment to Singapore. They had 400 lotus tubers that were going to Singapore, which was launching a new botanical garden. And again, I just find it amazing that a garden center that focuses on lotus and water lilies in Bergen, and between Churchville and Bergen, is selling lotus to Singapore, which is kind of crazy. But Singapore didn't open up their economy fast enough, and that shipment is not going to go this year. Hopefully next year, because 400 lotus plants is a big, big order. But they've had tons of online sales. They've had a great spring selling lotus. And right now they're starting to bloom. Just starting. The lotus are going to love this next week. They're going to jump out of the water. The leaves are going to get huge. This is going to be a great week for lotus. So you could go this weekend, or you could go and check first. I'm not certain about their hours for July 4th for today or tomorrow, but I suspect they're open, and you'll see sort of the start of the lotus season and things in bloom, and their carnivorous plants and their micro lotus, little tiny ones. But a couple weeks from now, after this heat wave, it's going to be pretty spectacular, I think, to see all those lotus. Also, one other thing, the Daylily Gardens, Charlie and Judy Zedek have open gardens that they do each year. And they've changed the schedule a little bit this year because of the coronavirus. And it's going to be 4 Sundays of July, so that starts tomorrow, 2 to 6 p.m. In the past, they've varied the day of the week. But this year, it's just Sundays, 2 to 6 p.m., and it's each Sunday in July. They're on 1 Hillside Avenue. No reservations, no charge. Just a chance to go and see the gardens. But you do have to wear a mask. You do have to practice social distancing. That's a priority for them, and for me, for a lot of people. And it should be the priority if we don't want to end up like all these other states that are going backwards quickly. They haven't had a lot of deaths, but that, I'm afraid, is going to come because of the number of infections that are now being reported. And a couple weeks from now, things may look a lot worse than they do right now in those states, and they already look pretty bad. Well, we got to avoid getting that. And so whether you're going to stores, garden centers, wherever the public might be, wear a mask. If you're close to people, put it on if you get close to people, and protect them. Show respect for other people. So Charlie and Judy made it a point to say, please wear a mask. Bring your own water bottle. It's going to be hotter tomorrow than today, and they're not going to have refreshments like they usually do. So they ask you to bring your own water bottles, so you stay hydrated in this heat. Their garden does have a lot of shade, really a surprising amount of shade given daylilies. You think of them as full sun, but they actually do well with some partial shade. So there is some shade in Washington Grove to take a little hike. There's tons of shade with the big old trees there. Lots of great old oak trees, tulip trees, huge trees in Washington Grove. That's right up above them. So they're at number 1 Hillside Avenue. It's the only house there. The water authority is on one side. School number 1 is on the other side of them. This is right off 490 between Winton and Culver, Hillside Avenue. And you can probably park at the school across the side street. The side street goes up toward the Washington Grove and Tay House, and actually road to the Water Authority. And they're right there at the corner of Hillside Avenue. Again, the Water Authority and School Number 1. So each Sunday of July, 2 to 6 p.m., and fascinating to see hundreds of daylilies in bloom. As I think I mentioned last weekend or the weekend before, they're all different shapes, sizes, colors, designs. I mean, you never knew there were this many daylilies, really. Some are tall, some are short. Some have huge flowers, some have little tiny flowers, some are miniature. He's been breeding some of his own hybrid, cross-pollinating, to creating some of his own varieties. He tends to specialize in the miniatures. But it is a unique daylily garden for the Northeast. I mean, I don't think there are too many daylily gardens like this, at least within a day's drive of Rochester. It's a pretty extraordinary garden, and only open for these 4 Sundays, 2 to 6 p.m. Again, no reservations and no charge. And he doesn't really sell these daylilies, but if you see one that you really love, he'll take your name and number, write down the name of the daylily, and if they're dividing them in the fall and they have extras, they will they'll call you. But again, this is a part of the sort of regulations and the rules around having an International Daylily Society garden is that you have to have these open garden days. And so they do each year, four of them this year, all in July. And you should go back, because you go to the one tomorrow, you'll see some of the more early, it doesn't feel like early summer, but still relatively early season daylilies. Or early to mid-season daylilies. And the end of the month, you'll see more of the mid to late season daylilies. So there'll be different ones in bloom. And they are really gorgeous. You can eat daylily buds. Don't tell Charlie Zedek and Judy that I said this, but if you have, like the ordinary orange tiger lilies or really just sort of wild daylilies, which I have some in my backyard from previous homeowner. They're not growing that much because they're in the shade, but they do flower some. And the buds, you can eat them raw. They're kind of crunchy. You can saute them. They don't have a lot of flavor, but it is kind of a cool texture. Of course, you'll have fewer flowers if you're eating the buds, which is why I sort of joke about that with Charlie Zedek. But if you have lots of these daylilies, or you know someone who does, these orange daylilies that are, you see them along the roadsides, and they can outcompete pretty much any weed out there. Someone may not care if they have fewer flowers, and they'll let you harvest a couple hundred buds, and those would be really delicious, sautéed. And again, you can eat them raw. And the bigger the bud, the more the crunch. It's kind of fun to forage for daylilies. And email me if you run into some really pretty beautiful flowers this time of the year. If you're wondering what things are, send me a note. Someone sent me a photo of a verbena, which is one of the common names is verbena on a stick. these have very long stems, long green stems, and then a little bunch of purple flowers, kind of like a little mini bouquet on a stick. It's Verbena bonariensis is the name of it. You can buy it as a perennial. It seeds itself, so I wouldn't buy more than one of them, probably. And the seedlings are not hard to take out of the ground, so I don't find it annoying at all. In fact, I kind of like having more of them. The butterflies and moths and things really love this verbena. It works well with other plants because the foliage is so minimal and the flowers get so tall. They might get 5 feet, maybe even taller than 5 feet sometimes. Probably up to 6 feet. And again, not a lot of foliage, so used around zinnias or some other dahlias, some other tall blooming plants. They work really well. I think it's a cool combination. In full sun, this verbena, there are lots of verbenas, so you got to be a little careful on which one you're getting. Some of them are annuals. This one, again, is a perennial, but even if you pulled them all out, you would probably have new ones coming up from seeds that had dropped from it. One of my favorite, become even more so one of my favorite plants to put in, and just the way it coexists with other things really well. Sometimes you have to cut it back a little bit so it doesn't overwhelm the other things, because it will get taller than they do sometimes, or maybe usually. But the purple of the flowers is really great, and I love the way the butterflies visit it. I haven't heard any reports I take that back. A neighbor said that they saw a monarch a couple weeks ago. Didn't see any evidence of any eggs being laid, and I haven't seen any monarchs yet this year. So let me know. Email me if you see some, and especially if you know where to find the eggs or you want more information on finding the eggs. I'd be happy to help you and send you some details. Last year, I'd found a lot of monarchs by this time of year. This year, none. It's a lot of monarch eggs. This year, none so far. And I'm hoping that'll change, that we'll have a whole lot of monarchs showing up at some point. And I've got lots of milkweed waiting for them. I mean, lots of milkweed. So the last 3 years, maybe 4 years, I've had about 150 eggs that I've found, and more that I couldn't harvest in time and didn't see. I could just tell that a caterpillar had hatched and eaten a little hole in the leaf, and then a spider had probably eaten it, and I hadn't captured that egg. So there were, I would guess, maybe 250 eggs that were laid in my yard each of the last 3 or 4 years. But before that, I had some years where I didn't see a monarch all season. So it does vary quite a bit. Let me know if you see monarchs and if you want more details on finding their eggs. It's michael@saferlife.com. We'll be back at 10 a.m. this morning with For the Love of Food and Discover the Finger Lakes at 11 tomorrow. It's the Grapevine. Here is saverlife.com. Have a great day.